My name is Gary Butterfield.
My name is Cole Ross.
You're listening to Best Quality Vacuum, the Duck Feed show about Breaking Bad, El Camino, and Better Call Saul. And you're listening to the Season 3 Wrap-Up.
Wrap-Up, baby. We're talking about that DVD. We're reading your responses. Yeah, and getting ready for Season 4. It's hard to believe we are more than halfway through this series.
Time to get box cut, baby.
Mm-hmm.
I got to pick up a DVD of Better Call Saul, like a big compilation, so I can get all those special features and such.
Yeah, I have put out a basically looking for sales alerts on those. So,
yeah, I got a mea culpa. I got to throw out here. We talked about this in the green room. So they changed the menu of this DVD on this season. At least I'm pretty sure they did. They made deleted scenes as part of the episode menus, as opposed to a special feature, and I just fucking missed them. It's embarrassing. You can be mad at me if you want to, listeners. I just fucked up. Usually they're not super impactful.
No.
They're like, you know, lingering shots, and the rest of the special features have stuff to talk about. And I watched all those. But yeah, it's just, boy, I would love to do away with, things being tied to a disc.
Yeah. It'd be great. It'd be like, pretty great.
Switching between discs to even navigate the special features, even though you can select them all from every disc.
I see the place. I see the place for physical media. I think it's pretty important given what we've seen about the way streamers act. Blu-rays could be better. I think they're they're misbegotten in a lot of ways.
If I were like, let's say either case, we're just altering reality.
Yes.
Right, like we're just wishing a thing, or where I would wish for streamers to be less shitty and do away with physical media.
Yes.
Like I see the need of it too, because you know, people are assholes, but I would rather them just not be assholes.
Yes.
I should be able to like have Breaking Bad and have all this shit. You know, I don't even know who made money from this DVD when I bought it on like three different discounts on like, you know, I don't know, some weird clearance thing. Like somebody made pennies for me to have access to these and made it confusing and inconvenient to get to.
Yeah. So we're putting the system on trial for the fact that we're recording this pretty much up against the wall on schedule.
Yes. It's my fault, right? Like I'm just saying if we were wishing, but it's certainly my fault. So if you got me mad, send your hate mail to, at @plumberduck on Twitter.
So we can hit the kind of the high points of those deleted scenes, you know, not all of them. I made notes of all of them, but just, you know, there's some that give like context, right? Like in the No Moss, the first episode where, you know, the twins do their walking away from explosion thing, we get unused footage from multiple angles on that.
Yeah. It makes sense. We find out later they only had enough explosives for one explosion.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes sense for them to shoot it, get it like really wide coverage on that.
It'd also be kind of a nightmare to like try and find another spot in that big field that was not scorched by a gigantic Hollywood style fireball.
Yes. Yeah. You know, so it makes sense for them to do that, even though in terms of like value, seeing an explosion from different angles is not that insightful. It's like it's cool that they have it. You know, it makes sense that they would have it, but it's like, that's the deleted scene thing. You know, sometimes.
It's how the sausage is made kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So the scene where Saul drops in on Walt at the Beachcomber, you know, you don't write, you don't call, you know, that kind of thing. There's a little bit of like extended dialogue in the middle where Saul pretty much says like, yeah, no, I know why you're here. I've actually been here before. You know, the Beachcomber, it's last train on the Loser Express. You know, so after one of his many divorces, Saul ended up on a bit of an interim stay here.
Living at Hotel de Kirk.
With race adult boarding house.
Yeah. Yes. An adult boarding house.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was going to say, tell me more. We're doing book report stuff. And again, I apologize.
Something that I thought was interesting, kind of in the way that the multiple explosion angle was interesting. So there's an extended version of the scene where Marie drops Hank off when he's on his way to El Paso. They extend the argument on that, and it's kind of cute because, you know, it seems like Hank's going to leave on her crying and him mad, but then comes back and tries to comfort her, which is which is good. The thing that's interesting about it to me is during the version that they have on the DVD, it's not like final sound mix. So Betsy Brandt, who plays Marie, has laryngitis, and you see her like speaking through that, and you know, then they would go back and then do ADR. Now, do you want me to explain what ADR is?
No, I know. Why did you say that? I know what ADR is.
No, I'm making a joke because every commentary explains what ADR is.
Okay.
I was not condescending to you.
Because I read there for a second. Do you want me to explain me? I'm kicking you in the shin. I'm gonna see you in a couple of days, man.
I know.
Yeah. Like it's gonna play with live ammo. It is a thing that people in insiders love to explain as if it is forbidden knowledge. It's like a whole set of filmic doki doki facts.
Yeah, I know.
You know, it reminds me of like, you know, did you know for gaming shit. It's just a different ecosystem.
Yeah. So it's kind of in the same vein as somebody who wants to explain to you the Wilhelm scream.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, I've heard that scream before. Is that same character here? Oh no, my friend. Therein lies the legend. Yeah. Audio engineers need to feel something.
From the same episode, from Greenlight there, in case you thought the scene with Hank interrogating the cartoon druggie was not long enough, in case you wanted more of this guy. Oh man, there's like twice as much. They shot twice as much.
Yeah. You keep going. This guy, this is golden. Just riff. You know, his name began with like a B. He had eyes. Yes, yes. Vince Gilligan just writing down, making check marks over and over on a more legal of pad.
Circling it five times.
Underlining. Just ludicrous. Yeah. Ludicrous, ludicrous.
Skipping ahead here from Fly, this is just in a line that I like, but I could understand seeming a little bit redundant. Walt is pointing out a speck of dirt on the outside of one of the tanks. This is before the fly shows up, right? And just like, hey, well, you know, that's really small. You can barely see it. Also, it's on the outside. And Walt says, Jesse, there is no outside. All of this inside.
Yeah, that's a great line.
Yes.
I could see having that there for sure.
There's a cute little two scene thing with Jesse and Brock in Abiquiu and Half Measures. And Abiquiu, Jesse, when he goes over to visit Andrea, brings Brock some toys, you know, just some little like dollar store impulse buy. This is what the bag says, cowboy and Indian toys to play with. And he seems really disappointed that Brock isn't there. But in Half Measures, we get to see Jesse and Brock playing with the toys.
Aw, a little continuity there.
Yeah.
It's Chekhov's toys.
Yeah.
You know, if you see in one deleted scene toys they have to be played with in another deleted scene.
Yeah. There's some good stuff in Full Measure. So the cold open when Walt and Skyler are going to see what would become their house. You know, they're leaving. They're outside. And Walt and Skyler get into their car, which is a Porsche convertible. It's like a 911 something or other. Later on in the episode, when Walt Jr. is trying to have the conversation about him getting his car when he gets his permit, it's very cute because he's explaining like, oh, how awkward it would be. You know, it behooves us to have a third car, and they bust his chops about that. Like, oh, it behooves us, doesn't it?
Yeah, very funny.
Yeah. And Walt Jr. tries to play it off, you know, like, oh, there's no sense explaining it to you, Dad, you know, why I want a cool car. You know, you drive an Aztec. And Walt says, no, you wouldn't believe it, but I used to drive a Porsche. Right.
Yeah.
And then he underlines it, you know, saying like all the cool stuff about it. And just, you know, Skyler jokes. So you had to have a shoehorn to fit into the thing. And Jr. asks, well, why don't you still have it? And Walt kind of clams up and just like doesn't explain and changes the subject.
I sold it for you.
Yeah.
You know, I walked away from my job like an idiot. And then also had a baby.
Yep.
Baby expensive little man.
And then one thing that doesn't add up to much, but is very cute to see, we get more time with Mike and Kaylee in the car doing this almost like a who's on first kind of routine with him, where it's like, who are you? You remind me, remind you of who? The man with the power of hoodoo. And they're just like power of hoodoo rather. And they're just kind of like going back and forth, and like, she's laughing and losing it from this like fun little rhyme kind of thing. Cute. Very cute. I like Mike and Kaylee time.
I do too. Yeah. All seems like very cute and mildly additive in a show without commercial breaks.
Yes.
You know, if it were just like on modern streaming, where episodes are just as long as they need to be.
Yeah.
You know, but I understand. Sounds like I understand why they're cut. The other special features in this, I think this is a really good batch.
Yes.
Compared to what we've seen so far. And I did watch these. And they're great.
Gary, I've got bad news.
Oh. No. Did they get worse?
No.
Or you didn't watch them? Okay.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm not picking up on your jokes today. And I apologize for that.
I'm being a little dry.
It's probably my fault. Apologies for that. Yeah. No weird headspace. We're both getting ready to put this in context. We record this show very far in advance. We're recording this right before we go to Milwaukee. And Cole and I are both, you so more than me, I'm not saying that as a dig, just to acknowledge your pain.
Yeah.
Get more anxiety around travel.
Yes.
But I get anxiety about having, you know, 4 days that I can't work on stuff and getting behind. And also get anxiety about travel.
Yes.
You know, I'm afraid I'm gonna forget something, I'm gonna miss my flight, oversleep, all that shit keeps fucking with me. So like, it's been a weird couple days.
Yes. Yeah. Basically, the 2 weeks leading up to a trip like this are disasters for us.
It's like the 2 weeks and then the 1 week after are all hard. So basically, we do this and it takes us out for a month. And there's only 12 of those in a year. It's not like we get tons of them. So it's please have some patience. Listen, we appreciate. But these are all good. So the first one is White Heat, Cranston on Fire. And it's showing season three, episode one, the part where Bryan Cranston sets his money on fire.
Yes.
And how they did that. And it's very funny and charming, because they actually do it. It's not digital. They feel like they could have done it that way, given what they do digitally later. But, they coat his arms in fucking Carl Havoc, stuff. He's got too much shit on him.
He does.
It's all flammable shit. It's really good.
So they're just really slathering him up with fireproof gel and then putting on basically Hulk hands that are made of some kind of silicone that is heat resistant, right?
Yes.
And then, you know, he only wears those in the one shot where he is slapping at the money stacks that are on fire and then pushing the grill into the water.
He wears it during the water splashing outside of the pool scene as well. And that you'll never be able to watch that again if you watch the special feature.
No.
Because if you know to look for it, he's definitely got fucking floppy salad fingers.
Yeah, no, this dude is ever
long. He looks
like
E.T.
Yeah, yeah. He's ever long over there. Yeah.
And Bryan Cranston, what a fucking treasure. He looks down at his hand melting and starts screaming in horror just for the audience after the take.
Yeah, just for the crew, because the gloves are slipping off. Yeah.
It's very funny. Like, I would laugh really hard at that. Like, I love, what a good little man. You know, what a good guy.
What a fun joke.
Yeah, this is very funny.
Yeah, I also thought it was interesting to see like the rig that they had for the shot where it's kind of like looking through the flame up into his face, like that cool propane burner kind of thing.
Yeah, a little stunt line of fire.
Yeah,
kind of thing. Yeah, that's real cool. You know, great little scene and little story how they did it. You know, maintaining Breaking Bad's dedication to doing something in a real way when like not doing it real would probably suffice. Mm-hmm. But this one is more successful than the Jesse floating heroin one. The next one, there's Pizza of Destiny, Cranston's greatest shot. This is about throwing the pizza. And it is explicitly a comedy short.
Yes.
It's got very dramatic voiceover and everything. But there's fun, like little details in this. There's, you know, they kept going for bigger and bigger pizzas, you know, it's like bigger.
Yeah. It's missing the detail that like they got a bunch of them in order to get multiple takes and then he nailed it in one. So they had all this pizza left over.
Yeah. Just tons of uncut pizza. Like everyone come up and take a bite.
Just grab a hunk.
Yeah. Like use the serving spoon that we all share in the writer's room.
But like the entire presentation of it, it's like a sports documentary. It's kind of the same tone of like talking about being there for the Immaculate Reception or something like that.
Yeah. Like an athlete on the level of Cranston.
Yeah.
And Bryan Cranston's playing it very straight. Like when you think about throwing a pizza, you don't think about the weight of it, the angle of it, the box. Has, you know, it's very cute. Like it's a funny little scene. What is less funny, but amazing, is Silent But Deadly, the brothers Moncada. Mm-hmm. Which is about the twins, Lewis and Daniel Moncada, just being the most charming motherfuckers on the planet.
I wanted this to be feature length.
I never feel this way. So like everyone, this is on me, right? But you get that feeling sometimes, like, and this is again on me, but sometimes you like look at somebody with a bunch of gang tattoos, mm-hmm. who's really tough and bald and looks angry. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the opposite of me. I probably don't have that much in common with this guy.
Right.
It's not, I have no hate in my heart, but I'm just like, you know, what would I do if I was stuck in an elevator with this guy?
What
I want to hang out with these guys so badly.
Oh my God. Yeah.
It's like, Patreon goal to have us like fly out and just have lunch with these dudes. And we're not going to record it or talk about it.
Nope.
We're just going to hang out and it's just for self-care. Look it up, sweetheart. It's just for us to have a good time.
Oh my gosh. But it's just them. They're having so much fun and they're geeking out about all the stuff that they got to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of similarly, right? Like, okay, the way this person has chosen to present themselves does not line up with a lot of my own life experience, right?
Yes.
People sometimes sort based on visual information, right?
Of course.
I also am a little bit like skeptical, or like, it feels like, oh, okay, sure. When somebody says like, they don't look like it, but they're the sweetest person. They're the sweetest person. The entire world, right?
Especially in this ecosystem. Yeah. Well, in this ecosystem as well, where that's 90% of the things that people say behind the scenes.
Yes.
It's wild how much better these DVD behind the scenes features are than mm-hmm. the podcast.
Yes.
Like, which is only just people calling each other sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that just has very little value. Like, you have to say that. You know, you're not just going to talk a bunch of shit about the person you had to go to work with the next day. And then also, like, just being told you're somebody sweet doesn't really do anything. You have to see the charisma.
Yeah. You have to see these brothers like making each other laugh.
Yeah. Busting each other's balls and stuff, you know, now he looks more like me. So he's more handsome, like all this like real cute stuff. They moved to Honduras, to LA. Lewis went to jail a bunch and eventually became started working on security for movies. And mm-hmm. the guy came over. He doesn't say which movie it is.
Right.
But a director came over. Yeah. Asked him if he wanted to be in the movie. And then because of that, he started acting. Mm-hmm. And when they the real cute scene, like when they found him, they were like, hey, you know, I wish we had two of these guys. And they were complimenting his tattoos. He's like, oh yeah, my brother just got a tattoo. And they're like, your brother?
Yep.
Shit, like bring him in.
Uh-oh. And
it has the same charm as an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie commentary.
Yes.
Where like, you know, he does something on screen and then you just get this, you know, you hear Arnold Schwarzenegger like, this was awesome when I got to do that.
Uh-huh.
It's them doing that. Like I got to shoot somebody. I just want to keep hitting that guy with an axe. You know, this is the part where I eat the apple. It's so good.
Oh man. The director called cut, but I just wanted to keep swinging.
You know? Having fun. I love the bit where they're like, it's so easy to get in character mm-hmm. with this. Like you put on the suits and the boots mm-hmm. and you just feel like the coolest motherfucker in the world. And it's instant. Yep. And like, you can kind of see it, uh-huh. you know? Yeah.
Yeah. The first thing that they had to do on the show was the shot walking away from the explosion, mm-hmm. Which is pretty intense if you're not used to being around explosions, but also to be told you can't flinch at all.
Yes.
Or else you're going to cost us tens of thousands of dollars.
Yeah. We only have enough explosion for this explosion,
yeah.
you know, and they nailed it. Like mm-hmm. they did such a good job. There's also a lot more insight. Production insight stuff that is interesting in this in a more palatable and quick package. Mm-hmm. Like just these guys being like, yeah, they put, you know, holes in the trunk and I was wearing a brace. So when they did the backup shot, like that's stuff that gets meted out in the commentary and podcast mm-hmm. in between thousands of compliments and just like, you know, vapid content.
Yeah.
And I just wanted hearing the person just say it, like, these mm-hmm. are so much better than either of those other forms of getting information.
Yeah. I'd like, I don't want to have it described, you know, how difficult it was to get into makeup and costume for this. I want to have the person tell me how much it fucking sucked.
Yeah. Yeah. And just, you know, just exactly. And just like, yeah, this is what I did. They cut this thing out, and it's just directly just saying it, you know, and with a sense of wonder about movie making that has no back padding because he didn't do it. You know, there's a thing that happens with these sometimes where it does, you know, it can feel a little back patty when they get a shot,
yeah,
even when it's cool. Mm-hmm. You know, like, yeah, I really like this. More of this.
Yeah, this was a standout to me.
Yeah, I really liked it. Also, I really like Team Science. S-C-I-E-N-C-E. This is a Jesse Pinkman production. It's a little cartoon animatic thing he made.
Yeah, it's like a crappy 3D hybrid cartoon about the superhero adventures of Dr. Chemistry, who is Walt, and then him, who is Rewindo.
Mm-hmm. And he includes all of his superheroes he made up and all of his friends.
Yes.
You know, who are in there. So it's like he keeps adding people to the Justice League, like Mighty Blowfish. I love Rewindo getting his powers in a microwave accident, which I think was canonical to Rewindo's first reference. But when you hear microwave accident, I think of like the character Microwave from Freedom Force.
Okay.
Not a literal appliance, you know, and he was just a microwave in a kitchen going nuts. It's not like microwaves from, you know, science shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really cute. And at the end, you know, they show at first he's fighting zombies for some reason, and he fights Tuco and a bunch of walkers, and then they fight Hell's Jesters. I really like Hell's Jesters.
Hell's Jesters is good.
That will always work on me. Like, just like, here's a bunch of evil clowns in suits. They're Hell's Jesters.
Yeah.
Like,
he put Badger in as a shapeshifter, and Skinny Pete is literally skinny. He can get into tight places. Yeah.
Flat Man from the Great Lakes Avengers.
Yeah. And Combo as Multiple Man.
Yeah. He's his own backup. You know, Jesse Pinkman delivers this with a really intense, you know, gravitas. There's a song about needing a hero that Badger sings. It's great. It's a very cute little scene. This I know is on YouTube because I watched it again because I thought it was cute.
Yeah. So, love the credit, executive producer and drawer.
Drawer is really good. Yeah. Also very funny are all of the AMC.com Better Call Saul commercials. I had a thought during this that is not a real thought, you know, but I tried on a thought for size, which is that, like, I don't do crimes. And I don't really need a lawyer or anything, but I did kind of want an excuse to call Saul or like have Saul Goodman be my lawyer. Cause there's a kind of, you know, and it's just because I like the character and I like how much he's a little shit.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
even if he's a bad person, but I was like, this seems fun to be one of these guys and get fitted for a neck brace.
Yeah.
You know,
to be party to a scam.
Yes. Yeah. And I don't have the wherewithal, you know, or the guts to start scamming.
Oh no, no. I would flip immediately.
Yeah.
Not because I'm like I love cops or anything. I just can't handle the pressure.
I would flip to the person I was scamming. It wouldn't even be a cop. I would just be like, you know what? I was going to try to do this and I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry because of all the screaming and I'm sorry. And that would be the end of it. But like, there's something about, you know, a confidence man like this that is like just immensely charming. Yeah, Peter Gould wrote all these and it feels like Peter Gould stuff. You know, you can see him taking an early direct interest in this character. Yeah. Prior to Better Call Saul. And these are all funny.
Yes.
To me.
Yeah. Like the first one, which is, you know, explaining that he can get you off the hook for illegally owning a tiger. Yeah. You know, just remember this one simple phrase. That's not my tiger.
Not my tiger. Yeah. And if you don't need to bring the tiger into the office. I don't need to see it. And we're going to get the tiger down to Texas. Guess what? Tigers are legal in Texas. And then he puts on a cowboy hat. Cowboy hat. Yeehaw. As if this happened, illegally owning a tiger comes up all the time. There's a Wayfarer class action lawsuit commercial. This is very funny. They have, you know, the different symptoms you can have, and they range from like real to fake, of course. There's a kind of an abridged version of this that shows up in the show.
Yeah.
It also dates it directly to 2010 that's actually the next one rather. This one though, very funny, you know, going through like insomnia, uncertainty, general sense of not feeling so good, you know, just like any port in a storm.
Yeah. It's like we have doctors on call to get you your diagnosis.
Verify your diagnosis. Very funny.
Yeah. And it ends with him like holding a candle and looking off to the distance. And then he turns his head.
A fucking and reboot zooms. Tear.
A fake tear rolling down his cheek.
Yeah, a tear reboots down his cheek. The one I was thinking of is this next one, which is like, who can I sue? Like, you might be thinking, you know, you might want to get in on a big lawsuit. Mm-hmm. But you have no one to sue. Who can you sue? And they do a scroll at the bottom. And the thing you can date this directly to 2010 is because one of the things is furries.
Oh, you know,
I get that. Like, is 2010.
Yeah, different you time.
Know? Different time. I would have laughed at that joke in 2010.
Yeah. It probably wasn't cool to do it then, but yeah, no, different time. Yeah,
no, yeah. But it, I mean, you know, in terms of just like a group listed mm-hmm. as a thing, it was a punchline in and of itself. It's not saying anything about furries. Oh, yeah.
No, I'm just trying to think of what I could sue a furry for.
Yeah. There's that story around that time that contributed to a lot of furry stuff about them coming all over. In a literal sense, in that hotel,
yeah,
like leaving loads on windshields and shit, and like, at least for me, when I was, you know, more, you know, anti-furry, because, you know, again, in the water, like I'm mm-hmm. no longer that contributed a lot to it.
Yeah,
like this idea of just like stepping in a load in an elevator and being like, the fucking furry cons in here of it.
Yeah,
again, you know, I don't want to step in a load.
Turns out that had more to do with exhibitionists.
Yeah. Exactly. Though that's not just, you know, furries. That's just, it's like how, you know, any, you know, you say this all the time, like any minority group is not a monolith, right? Like, you go on Twitter and like it feel like, you know, I follow like a bunch of trans ladies who are funny mm-hmm. and great, but they're so unrelentlessly, fairly horny mm-hmm. that like one of them had to do an apology post for coming out of as ace. And I was like, what the fuck, man? Like, this is so weird that the culture. And then I'm like, you know, that feels like, you know, if I were stupid and had like a little bit less experience, I'd be like, oh, this is a monolith. And then I think about our Slack and it's just like full of like, you know, with all affection, normie trans people.
Yep.
And it makes me very happy. Like, it's just like, oh yeah, no, they're just people, you fucking idiots. Like, what are you so scared of? They're, you know, it's not all absolutely ferociously horny, you know, sex monsters.
Yeah, like, that's a cartoon you made up in order to justify hating people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, and it's also just not representative. It says more about, not, you know, sex monsters, not the right word. It says the more about exhibitionism or super, you know, the same with the furries, right? Yeah. It's just the parallel there. Well, it has nothing to do with the fursuits. Has everything to do with, like, they got off on putting loads in public.
Yeah, like, yeah. Lack of consideration. Come on.
Yeah, like, and it was hot to them to put a load in the elevator. Mm-hmm. And then the idea that somebody who was there to, you know, work at the hotel stepped in the load was hot to them, but had nothing to do with them dressing up as animals.
Yeah.
You know? No.
Okay, so that's something we could sue a furry for.
Yes, if you step in a load, call Saul. if you step in a furred load.
There's a little mailbag segment, mm-hmm. you know, just like, you know, did I murder my husband?
Or the cops seem to think that I murdered my husband.
Yeah.
Let me stop you right there. Don't even say murder and don't even write it down. Mm-hmm. At this point, what kind of medications was he on? Was he old? Old people are on really strong medications. He might have dropped dead anyway. it's real good.
Yeah, and then talks about counter suing, like, even you could get some PNS. That's pain and suffering money,
baby. And then we get testimonials from some characters we know and some new characters
mm-hmm.
from this. Badger, you know, from the incident of the cop, DJ Qualls lying to him. You know, like, I'm actually an adult man.
Many such fucking cases.
You liar, you fey. You fey trickster. But you know, he's just like, yeah, then I was back with my homies burning one, which is what we call smoking.
Tobacco.
Tobacco, yeah. Very funny.
Yeah. And there's like a group testimonial that includes Wendy.
Yes.
Sipping the on implication, her mug.
Yep. The implication that Saul is gonna waive her legal fees in exchange mm-hmm. for sex.
Yes.
Now, we get a special feature about the Aztec hitting the two drug dealers at the end of Half Measures.
Mm-hmm.
This is really impressive.
Barry.
You know what they did, you know, this whole idea, the guy who puts it together does say digital performers. That drives me nuts. I hate that phrase.
Yeah.
I get it, but it's just a money for nothing computer graphic guy. It's not a digital performer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they talk about the process. Like, okay, we had to make an animated storyboard. Then we had to, like, block it out and understand where the cutoff was going to be. Shoot the plates, one for the dealers, one for the car. It's very funny when they shoot the one for the dealers, because the one who's furthest screen right has to, like, bend over at the waist 90 degrees very quickly, which is not a natural movement to have to make.
No, and the other one kind of runs away. I really like the detail when they did the plate for just the car. They put down sandbags. So it would, like, the thump thump, you know, run over the bodies. And it does look great, you know, like, you look at it on screen, even them directly showing you that it's computer graphics. Like, when they show it again, you can kind of see, you know, like, you could guess, but it does look really good.
Yeah, it doesn't break the illusion. And by the end of it, I thought it'd be, like, kind of inured to it. No, it still looks really upsetting, even at the end.
No, it's very good.
Yeah.
There's a little AMC news visit to the writer's room. Which is just showing kind of their process, and their process is to, like, play with toys while they write, which makes sense. You do stuff with your hands while you're pitching ideas. They got really into crafts.
Yes.
At this point.
Yeah. Anna Gunn dropped by the Burbank, you know, office and brought them some clay and pipe cleaners. They've got all this origami around and stuff. I'm a little, like, so seeing stuff like this, like, I totally get it. Like, I fidget. I'm playing with the back scratcher right now. Totally understand. Anytime this is, like, shown as a, oh, those wacky creatives, because I was part of, like, startup culture in the early 2010s around this, I know what this is cover for a lot of times. And so anytime I see it, the hair on the back of my neck fucking raises.
Well, it's funny because Vince Gilligan's right there, and he's like, you know, people think, look at this and think we don't work. We actually put in, like, 10-hour days for 9 hours at a time, you know, 9 days in a row.
It takes us two weeks to get a whole episode down.
He explains, like, you know, how hard they're working, but it does look like an adult playpen. You know, and it's just, there's one of them in here that, I watched, and you either missed it or it wasn't worth talking about. I wanted to mention the music one. Because they show the composer, they show Dave Porter, and then they show their music supervisor who picks licensed music for it, who looks, just like Matt Berry in, Dark Marenghi's Dark Place. It looks like I've never seen a human who isn't Matt Berry look more like a Matt Berry character than the music supervisor on Breaking Bad.
I watched it. I didn't make a note of it just because there wasn't anything great. There's nothing. It's just like,
there's nothing.
Vince wanted to use the song Windy for the Wendy opening.
Cool. Which we already knew. Or just, like, you know, we wanted to evoke the Southwest, but only kind of, not really.
Didn't want to make it a Western.
Like, it's, you know, it's real wishy-washy. I just liked watching seeing these weird guys who, you know, by rights should never appear on camera. Like, does not feel like they, you know, that would ever happen.
The gag reel is very cute.
Gag reel is great.
Primarily because of Anna Gunn.
Anna Gunn's very funny in it. I love her not being able to get out of the car. Very cute. And I will also watch these until I die. Like, I will watch people break.
It's the funniest thing in the entire world. Like,
it kills me.
For the love of God, just show me people corpsing. Save all of that.
I don't know what it is. It is literally the funniest thing in the world. The you know, Tim and Eric did that medical thing, that Dr. Wareheim, and it's four episodes, and they're all very funny. But the one that, like, has me cry laughing is the fourth one, where it's just them corpsing. You know, and it's just from saying, like, them taking a sample of shit and be like, I'm gonna go take this to the home lab, and that is just such a funny line that they can't get through it, and it's just really good. Like, the home lab.
It kills me every time. I don't know, like, that has been around forever, you know, the romantic comedy that has the outtakes and the credits or whatever. So, like, this is at the very least, like, Gen X normie shit that we're huffing on.
Sure. Like, this is the millennial cringe that we will decide to be in this case. But I don't give a shit, because it makes you laugh, and laughter's a really honest reaction. Like,
it brings me joy.
I could flex weird muscles I didn't know I had to try not to laugh.
Yeah.
And for what? to impress a TikToker.
To appease who?
I
love Skyler closing the door on Walt when he has the pizza there, and then after a beat, opening the door just enough for her to reach out and take the dipping sticks
and then shut it again. Very funny. I think it's the scene where Ted shows up where they open the door and she's making out with a guy, like a random dude. I think that's when Ted showed up.
Yeah.
Oh, is this a good time? Very funny. Bryan Cranston has really weird energy during these. Like at one point he just starts doing an accent.
He starts doing kind of a pretty like bad Japanese. It's offensive.
Yeah. He's doing like an old samurai.
Yeah.
Hanzo voice.
Yeah. He mushmouths something and then it like segues it into doing like a, you know, a samurai ritual and like picking things up and kind of bowing.
Yeah. It's old man. I'm not going to cancel Bryan Cranston over it. It's just, it's not super good. And then just also, I love, you know, in corpsing, I love Jesse Pinkman not being able to get through the line, Ebola, yo. It makes your intestines come out your asshole. You know, whatever. He just can't do it.
Nope.
And every time he can't do it, Bryan Cranston bonks him with the, I made
with
this.
With the fly swatter.
Yeah. I made this. Uh-huh. Very cute.
Yeah. The final special feature here is they recorded video during the recordings of the podcasts, and they released partial video versions of those. We've talked about the podcast and its many shortcomings, but it is this is hilarious and painful to see the production setup for it as somebody who does this.
It's very old school. Like this is how I did my first podcast in like 2007.
Yeah,
basically
the ergonomics, Gary. Like everybody sitting on a like leaning as far forward as they can on the
everyone's on a human question mark.
On a tiny couch to reach an SM58 that is on a way too short desk stand for it. So many pops and bumps. Kelly Dixon, like having to like wrench her body around to look at them because the mic on her desk is not pointing in that direction.
It's very, you know, they have to do 10 of them a year. So like, I get it from a perspective, like I imagine, you know, they just use it as another room. Like they don't have a dedicated studio space for this or anything. And it was kind of interesting to look at, just to see what people look like, you know, so the people, but it's mostly, you're right, like reverse production porn.
Yes.
You know, production nightmares stuff, but a very specific like podcasting production nightmares, which we don't get production nightmares very much. There's a whole Facebook account for music ones, but let's get into everyone's responses about season three
here. Yeah. We've got some lingering ones from season two here that came in after the deadline, but I thought these were good. They provided extra context. I'll get started here with Billiam.
Yeah. Friend of the show.
Yes. Billiam. Yeah. I just listened to the season two finale episode. I live in New Mexico and thought I'd share a piece of local history that, if it didn't inspire the episode, rhymes with it a little bit. The mountains you can see behind Walter's house are the Sandias. On February 19th, 1955, TWA, do you see where this is going? TWA Flight 260 took off from the Albuquerque airport, destined for Santa Fe. It would have been a 10-15 minute flight tops. It was foggy that night, and instead of flying north to Santa Fe, the pilot went east toward the mountains. The plane crashed in a canyon and all 16 people on board died. Because of where it crashed, the wreckage of the plane is still in the mountains more than a half century later. There's the engine, chunks of fuselage, a wing embedded into the canyon wall, and red plastic chairs scattered all around the crash site. It's a 6-hour hike round trip and a massive pain to reach, but it's one of the most haunting places in a state full of haunting places. Visitors who don't want to hike 6 miles uphill might be able to see it from the tram, which goes directly over the site. Again, not sure if this inspired the episode, but it's a strange piece of local history that I always associate with this plot in the show. So much of New Mexico's weirdest stuff is still out there in the desert, more or less preserved for those willing to make the trek.
Yeah. Someday in the future in Fallout, that's going to be a town.
Yep.
You're going to go find a rare companion there. that's really interesting.
They're going to call it Crashton. Yeah.
Exactly. That's a good reason not to have 15 minute flights.
Yeah.
You know, like even if the risk for a flight is relatively low, you know, even today, even with all the news, like still relatively low, it is, you don't need to fly.
No, probably not.
Minutes. Yeah. Yeah. That's great. I would like to see that. A bunch of chairs scattered around the place is always a surreal sight that I enjoy.
Yes.
Kieran says, "Hey guys, I know I'm late, but I wanted to write in about the air traffic portion of the final episode. Donald, played by the 61-year-old John DeLancey, would be about 5 years too old to be a controller at TROCON, the Terminal Radar Approach Control, as the mandatory retirement age for controllers is 56. The job is simply too stressful and requires too much mental acuity to keep up past that age. Probably the nerdiest shit I've ever sent in. Useful.
Good to know.
I didn't know that. My understanding was no matter how many people you kill, you have a better chance of bringing those souls back to life than to firing those people. So you just kind of put them on smaller and smaller planes. Even though my understanding of that comes entirely from the Bedtime Stories episode.
Yeah. Oh gosh. Go check out the unfilmable series we did on Bedtime Stories. Yeah.
Or just Bedtime Stories.
Or just Bedtime Stories.
That episode is so good. Split splash. Yeah. Milk goes in the bucket.
Yeah. Good to know. Also kind of comforting, I don't know. Maybe my opinion will change when I'm 57 and I can't become an air traffic controller as my fallback.
There was time enough at last. No.
Oh, God. Adam writes, listening to Gary talk about how annoying fan theories are made me want to share the show that was the worst offender and how that helped me find a healthier way to engage with mystery shows. Westworld's creators were infamously upset that Redditors figured out the twist in season one. So for season two, they did an AMA and announced that they would air a trailer that laid out all of the twists ahead of time. While technically true, it was as up its own ass as you would think it would be. In fallout of that season, I decided that theories are fine and fun, but you can't be precious with them. I still love guessing along with a week-by-week mystery show, but I'm never upset that I was wrong.
Yeah, to clarify that position, I have no problem with guessing on the fan end.
Yeah.
I hate when it reaches the creators and then becomes this Ouroboros shit.
Yeah.
Where that part sucks.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the content dragon that like must be fed, it always happens.
Yes.
Vanity Fair is going to put up a YouTube that's Jordan Peele reacting to the worst fan theories about Nope,
mm-hmm.
as sure as the day is long.
Yes.
It's just going to happen. So it does kind of, I wish it was segregated. I think it's a weird dark side of access.
Mm-hmm.
We were never meant to have this much access to creators.
Not at all.
Not even a little bit. But that's good insight for Westworld, because Westworld is a show I think took a giant dump, and it makes sense that they were maybe having a hard time with it. Westworld season one stands up pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good story on its own. And then season two is real. And then it gets more and more up its ass. And you can almost see the writers running away from the lost fed audience that is just trying to antagonistically outsmart them.
Yeah. It's a bad dynamic and a bad relationship. I also don't like it when people argue about their theories.
That's silly too.
You made that up. This doesn't need to be a confrontation. Stop polluting my air.
You literally made up a thing that isn't in the text. I'm not here to listen to your fan fiction without consent. John says, hi guys, love the show. Been doing my own retrospective of Breaking Bad and think that Gale can be interpreted as autistic. In Sunset, we learned that Gale doesn't like to look Walt in the eye. He's memorized an entire poem by Walt Whitman, which suggests that poetry is an intense special interest. He's using a vacuum pump to make coffee because he hates bitter flavors. He dislikes all the socializing he had to do in academia. He brought a CV for his first day at the Crystal Meth Factory. This suggests that he doesn't understand social cues very well. I would love to hear your opinion on this, as I think it adds a whole extra layer of tragedy to Gus hiring Gale and using him to supplant Walter.
Yeah, I'm agnostic toward it. All of those are good points. I could bring up the fact that Gale understood the cue when Gus was telling him, hey, learn how to cook fast so we can kill Walter. But also, autism is a spectrum, and there are literally as many different kinds of it as there are people with it. So hard to say.
It doesn't feel like Hollywood autism to me. Given that he also shows a lot of emotion when Jesse shows up. That is a really extreme circumstance, but there's a lot of emotionality in that.
Yeah.
I generally, and I'm not calling out John for this because I don't know John. Mm-hmm. I'm not calling out anybody, but I try not to clock people.
Yeah.
I try not to diagnose fictional characters as anything.
Yeah.
I find the whole process a little bit distasteful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's not for me to do. And then also, I don't necessarily know that it's super additive.
Yeah. I'm also of the opinion people can claim who they want to claim too. It doesn't affect me. Yeah.
No. That for sure. Like it doesn't hurt me if that adds something for you.
Mm-hmm.
It adds something for you. Yes. You know, and I couldn't take that away if I wanted to.
Nope.
I just, you know, it doesn't.
It's not an activity that you or I really engage in.
Yeah. I for me, I personally don't see the value in it.
Yes.
You know, no.
If true, it would add tragedy to it.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
But it's already really, it can't really just be tragic. A regular
murder. Yeah. it wasn't very tragic. And this really is the kind of sauce that makes it tragic. You know,
yeah.
If somebody gets murdered arbitrarily because of another man's ego, it is that's much Vegas, sadder.
Yeah.
It's much sadder if they happen to have, you know, if they're not neurotypical.
Yeah.
I know that's not what you're saying.
Yes.
I'm making fun of you or making fun of the attitude.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is this me? I believe
this
it is
you.
Yes. Eric says, I recently went through a divorce and this rewatch of season 3 has really been resonating with me. The dinner scene where Walter and Skyler, the dinner scene with Walter and Skyler really hit home. There are so many moments, where appearances have to be maintained for the sake of the kids. And you do get that false optimism. Walter feels that maybe things are getting better, but nothing has ultimately changed. Anyway, do you think that Gail is the, quote, least bad of the people that work for Gus this season? Libertarianism, coffee obsession, and show tune loving aside, he's just a little sandal-wearing chemistry nerd with a people-pleasing fetish. It's so tempting to be able to eliminate my mortgage, credit cards, and student loans without having to go full Heisenberg.
Here, there's two answers for this. The joke answer I have is the least guilty person who works for Gus Fring is always going to be Lyle.
Yeah.
The very, very good boy who works at Los Pollos Hermanos.
Yep.
The second thing is, Eric, my dude, are you fucking asking us if it's okay for you to start cooking meth? You got divorced and you don't want to become a murderer, but you want to get rid of your mortgage, your credit cards, and your student loans without having to go full Heisenberg? Because if that is what you're asking, the answer is unequivocally and legally yes.
Yep.
We think so, and we're on record.
Yeah, green means go.
Yeah, just fucking go for it, dude. Carpe diem, self-care, look it up, sweetheart.
I don't know. I it's hard to say because Gail definitely does have a body count under him for his work, for however much he makes on this. Is, you know, like least bad is still, you know, it's not great ground to stand on. I want to be conscious of me giving Gail slack because I see myself in him. You know, like there's a reason that all that shit in that apartment like called out.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh no, this isn't exactly my kind of thing, but also I know exactly where this comes from.
Sure.
So
yeah. You know. And it's also a thing where dealing with a show where you have to be at least relative, at least a little bit, like relative moralistically to appreciate the show.
Yeah.
Like you can come up and just be, you can watch the show and just be like, everybody, they're all in the meth trade. They're all thieves and murderers.
Yeah.
Fuck them all. But to engage with the show as a drama, there are shades of black. Like that is what it's doing. So like, it's kind of not playing the game to just say everyone. And, you know, it's part of why Skyler freaking out about smoking pot is so silly.
Yes.
In the thing, because if you just treated crime as crime, the show doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know, so like, there's probably a pretty good, like, I wouldn't let Gail off the hook. I also think out of the people who he directly works for, like he probably has less blood on his hand directly than like, you know, Tyrus.
Yeah,
or something, Victor, or Mike.
Yeah,
Victor or Mike, like probably.
Yeah.
You know, but in real life, don't actually start cooking meth.
Yeah. Despite what we just said in that bit a while ago, bit.
It would make groundbreaking TV, but you shouldn't do it.
Yeah. Gail is the most effective at lying to himself about what he does, but he also has the least lying to do to get there.
I think he believes his justification.
Yes.
Like, I don't know that he's lying to himself when he's like, they're adults and they get it some way.
Yeah.
I think he believes that, even if that is kind of bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Robinson says, season 3 is when Walt and Jesse embraced their inner darkness and became the bad guys. The story became about bad guys doing bad things to other bad guys. It's also the season where the show refined its suspenseful nature and became an absolute thrill ride. It's hard to remember a lot of specifics on what happens over season three, but the way the plot expanded into Gus's empire and large-scale meth production was exciting. I came to this show years after it aired on television, and this season showed me why the show was so popular. How often is television this riveting?
Not very.
Not very at all.
Yeah. Season three is where they hit their gear, right?
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
You know, and there is, you know, in the great Better Call Saul versus Breaking Bad debates, you know, one of the pieces of evidence leveraged against Breaking Bad is that it's just a thriller. You know, it's just a crime thriller. I can't, you know, I don't necessarily get on board with that just because a really, really well-executed crime thriller rocks.
Yep.
I love that. You know, so if you think that that genre has a higher or lower ceiling on it, like honorable minds can differ. But like, I think that Robinson is onto it. Like it again, the feeling at the end of, you know, Half Measures and just being like, well, you know, I got to wait a week for this is you could bottle that. Like it, you know, incredible shit.
Yeah.
No.
Final one here is from Jay, from the, I'm from the Internet podcast, co-hosted with Winslow.
Yeah, friend of the show.
Yes. Howdy, fellas. Since my niche is Something Awful History and you lamented not getting to experience seeing the episode Half Measures in a crowded theater, I thought I would relay the experience of participating in live watching that episode on Something Awful's TVIV subforum. Back when shows premiered in a scheduled broadcast, people would watch the broadcast and post their thoughts and reactions in real time alongside the show airing. So if you have access to the Something Awful archives, you can find live real-time reactions to just about every major TV event of that era, including all of Breaking Bad. The climax of Half Measures is incredible. Pages of shocked exclamations and single emoticon replies posted in the span of a minute as Pinkman faces down the dealers, and then the posting equivalent of a standing ovation and how agonizing the next week was going to be waiting to find out what happened next. The event was immortalized with a custom emote of the Pontiac Aztec running over a smiley face while trailing the words, "Oh, hulky fuck," behind it, because such misspellings were common for people excitedly mashing their keyboards while not wanting to take their eyes off the screen. Season 3 was definitely my favorite in terms of discussion. It's when Breaking Bad was big enough that people knew about it, but it hadn't hit Netflix and reached the critical mass of the final season's audience. Later seasons had more active threads, but they were full of bickering over fan theories so ridiculous that nearly a decade later, when Better Call Saul concluded, there were posters still making reference to them. One of the reasons I enjoy Best Quality Vacuum is because I have a strong sense of memory of where I was in my life when each episode of Breaking Bad aired. And in addition to reliving and getting perspective on the show, I relive and get perspective on my own life. I was a very lonely person at this time in my life, and this may not have been the optimal communal viewing experience, but we all know the duck feed line on optimal versus suboptimal, and I'm glad it means this moment of television history is crystallized in amber. Because seriously, oh hokey fuck.
Oh, hokey fuck is the only thing to say about it. It is probably, you know, this segues us pretty well into first and worst. If we want to do that, because that moment is probably the single moment that I remember the most from Breaking Bad in terms of sense memory.
Yeah.
And feeling it, you know, that's probably my first for this episode. Half Measures gives you the speech.
Yes.
And it gives you that scene. And together, that is a 1-2 punch of absolutely iconic stuff.
No. It
kills me.
Yeah. Absolutely ruins me.
Yep.
That feels like a pretty clear first.
Yeah. You know?
Like this almost feels like two seasons, which makes this feel a little strange to like pick up a first and worst on, you know?
Yeah.
Because like that's true. The first half is Hank and Skyler's story, you know, with the investigation and with Ted. And then you end up, you know, with the second half being all, you know, we are in Gus's world now kind of stuff. So it does make it a little weird. For a worst, it's kind of hard to pick, because the floor is pretty high.
The floor is real high in the season. For me, it's going to be one of the early ones where it is building tension with the cousins.
Yeah.
Maybe the second episode, the one where they kill the random lady for no reason.
Yeah, Caballos and Nombre is the one I'm kind of hovering around.
Yeah. You know, and just with the axe and the apple bite cute cut kind of thing, that might be, you know, it never got, was never a rock that was out of my shoe that they were being so stupid and like being so risky.
Yes.
You know, I get that they're less careful than Gus and that they really care about this blood vengeance, but also like, I don't know.
No.
You're going to take down the entire fucking cartel. You know, why are you doing this?
Yeah.
You could just rent a hotel. You have cash. Like, you know.
Right.
I don't, you know. It's not like you're inconspicuous. You know, that's probably my low point. Or at least like in terms of plot line. That was stretched over the course of several episodes. It's hard to pick out an individual episode. Yeah. That's probably the low point of like things I thought about during this season.
Yeah. Caballos and Nombre is probably like, you're just like looking at the list and the brief synopses, like that is the one that is just the most like we are setting the pieces in place, which is necessary work, but not necessarily, it is necessary, but thankless work. And, you know, I'll lean into it being thankless, by not rewarding it with being the best. I will just lay it there.
Shan't think it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Never a thank she'll have. Yeah. Except for you for listening.
Thank you.
We appreciate you. If you're hearing this, the things you can do to help us out, if you like the show, is rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Podcast Addict, tell your friends about us, post about us, and join us at patreon.com/duckfeedtv. And that is where you can get all of our other shows and make sure the spigot keeps going.
Yeah. If you have thoughts about season 4, write them in during season 4. Just go to duckfeed.tv/contact. There's no like particular deadline. We just take them from all across the season.
Indeed.
And finally, join us in thanking our producer, Gwen, who also composed our theme music. Thank you, Gwen.
Yes, very much. Thank you to Gwen. Until next time, even though it might be groundbreaking television and award-winning television even, don't start cooking enough.